Are you ready? Are you going to sing us a little song to start this song?
Hello, I've got a feeling that love is here to stay. Am I stuttering or anything?
No, you're fine. That's very good. Today, what will we call this? I don't know. First, the date, June 14th. And we'll call it Noel Returns for Some Trump Talk.
Really?
What do you mean, really?
We're going to talk about Trump?
Well, we're talking to the guy that worked with Trump. What should we talk to him about?
Well, let's just talk about Trump and other American stuff.
Oh, well, there is. But there's also a great story. I don't know if you heard it, where...
he shit himself.
No, no, better than that. Oh. Well, it's not as... No, it's not as good as that.
Was it the way he was wearing his
pants? The way I think? Or? No, no, no.
Get his pants on backwards?
That one? No, I like that. There's that. No, those pants don't have a front in them. No, what I want to talk to him about, Noel about, is the fact that Trump keeps showing up at people's, not only their engagements, but at their memorial services.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he won't leave. Come on. He won't.
My question there is, who books their wedding memorial service at Mar-a-Lago now?
Well, I also think there's another place, another location. He owns a golf course in New Jersey in Bedminster. I don't know the name of it, but yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff. We haven't had a good Trump sesh for a while.
I haven't had a good Trump break.
I haven't had a good what, Phil?
Trump break.
A Trump
didn't
break.
Didn't our analytics reveal that that turns people off?
Yeah, every day. You know, listen, if we didn't do everything that turns people off, then what will we do? It'd be
Uncle
nothing.
Fred, we turn people off.
That's right. Here we go. Here's something that turns people on. Baby Fizzball.
The following episode of Humble with Fred is brought to you by the Retirement Dirt Box, Gig Sky, the Chambers Plan, Clear Air Solutions, Palma Pasta, Safe Tech Security, NextHome.ca, DraftKings, Red Light Holland, City Parent, and our newest sponsor, Health Gauge, providing digital solutions to improve health outcomes. If you'd like to talk to Humble and Fred, our Twitter account is Humble Fred Radio. And now from the remote headquarters of the Humble and Fred Show, here are Humble and Fred.
Did you hear that Phil's moving upstairs into the main floor with mom, stepdad, sisters, Mrs. Hong? And I said to him when you were getting your coffee, I said, well, how are you going to get to make little baby Hongs? And he said, downstairs, and I quote, is where the fuck chair is. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he said.
Oh, Billy. That's a... We've been to that home. It's a townhouse. How many bedrooms are upstairs?
So there's three bedrooms upstairs and right. two down here in the basement. Okay. We call this the new bedroom because, as new you bedroom. Can tell, it was, you know, it's built with four walls.
Yes, a lot of them have four walls, Phil.
So somebody will move down there, one of your sister daughters?
We're using this place as a storage room, but it was meant to be my bedroom many years ago.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So why didn't you and Mrs. Hong take the downstairs sort of as your area, like all you guys would, so you wouldn't have to go upstairs? And
well, we had a vacant bedroom upstairs anyways, and it actually has a cathedral ceiling, so it's just nice to have something nicer,
right?
When we're married, of course.
But what about the headboard banging against the wall? Won't that keep your mom up?
Well, the good news is the second floor has the master bedroom, of course, as you guys remember, the first bedroom and the other bedrooms, but they're separated together by a big long corridor.
Okay.
So they're on the other side of the house. They're facing the backyard. We're facing the front. So it's all good.
Well, to be honest with you, I don't remember. I'm going to tell you right now, Phil T. We were having a few technical issues before the show. I think it might be this Zoom meeting. Because Fred just had a little warble. So I'll tell you what, if it happens again, I'm going to shut it down and then we'll just start again. Do you know what I mean? Fizzy?
Oh, yeah. But Fred and I were also talking about how our internet connections were kind of odd this morning because Fred's getting, what is it, 12% of what you should be getting, basically.
No, my numbers are great.
Yeah, right. I've got great numbers as well, but I'm assuming something's the matter with Zoom.
Hey, Freddie, don't anyway. Be defensive. It's not a personal thing. Your numbers are fantastic.
Oh, but he put words in my mouth. I didn't.
I'm just saying you should get what you paid for. That's all.
I'll tell you what you two should get. Vaccinated.
Hey,
Every day. I'm sorry. By the way, I'm also getting my voice back on somebody's computer. So that's another thing we should maybe do. Is that you, Phil? Because I just heard it come back through somebody's Zoom. All right? So we've only been gone for 3 days. We shouldn't have these kind of... Every day, more and more people across Ontario are receiving their COVID-19 vaccines. In fact, isn't there a story from the weekend that now the vaccination rules and restrictions are starting to loosen up? Well, we'll get to that in a second. Health Canada approved vaccines are conveniently available in hospitals, doctors' offices, pharmacies, and mass vaccination sites. Every dose. In fact, there's another story, too. The Alberta government is offering people $1 million lottery prizes as an incentive to get vaccinated. Every dose brings us closer to what we've missed. So join millions of Ontarians. Just do your part and get your shot. Visit Ontario.ca, book vaccine, paid for by the government of Ontario.
Yeah, I'll tell ya, you need no more proof of the importance of vaccines and what they can do than the United States right now. I was corresponding yesterday, John Ellefson. Remember, he was our guy correspondent during the run-up to the election.
And the early days of the pandemic, he was reporting from Maryland, where he lives.
Yeah. Well, I'm corresponding with him yesterday by text. He's enjoying a lunch at a lovely place right on Chesapeake Bay, because he lives in Annapolis. And he said it's open. Maryland's open. And he said, you know, the percent, I forget what the percentage was, 80-90% people totally vaccinated, and they're open. It's business as usual. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm watching the Jays game yesterday from Massachusetts, Boston, and looks like, you know, full tilt there as far as the crowd goes. And I'm not hearing any stories of mass the spreader events, these things becoming spreader events. So yeah. Get your vaccine, please.
Here in Ontario.
You can be like them.
Here in Ontario, I have a list of all the things that are open. And it is, you know, we're still, correct me if I'm wrong, Phil, are we still not the most restricted jurisdiction in North America? Still, malls aren't reopening yet. Schools, right. Of course.
Everyone's already like stage two-ish if you're using...
There's a lot of people in North America are stage two, stage three.
Mm-hmm.
Malls, you have to have an entrance to the outside.
Yeah, an outdoor.
If you don't, you're not open.
Religious services, though, they're back. Rites and ceremonies, including wedding service and funeral services, permitted at up to 15% capacity of any particular room. Well, as long as we've got our religious services.
But let's be fair, that it's 15% for non-essential retail, so they're at that level.
Yeah, I'm not really interested in being fair about religion.
It's just really frustrating.
Yeah.
And as I say, part of it concerns me. They're still talking about the variant, and I'll call it the Delta. I won't put India anywhere near it, I promise. Mm. Jesus.
Can we call it the Delta Dawn variant just for those people from the 70s?
But I'm very concerned about this because they said it'll be the dominant one in Ontario or Peel.
Yeah.
And I'm reading this morning that Boris Johnson may delay their next phase because of this Delta variant. And again, it gets back to, you know, Doug Ford, big fat cat conservative businessman, Ontario open for business and all that shit. If we're dragging our feet, like, you know, is it worse than they're even letting on, or are we on the verge of something else? I'm very concerned.
All right. Well, thank you for expressing your concern. The numbers on the weekend were pretty steady. I'd written it down. I don't have the exact ones in front of me, but we had a good bunch of days when it was dipping, and then it kind of stayed the same or went up a tiny bit. This is for all of Ontario. What were you going to say there?
Well, here's the key. It was around 500, a little below, a little above. But only yesterday, deaths, only 7, which was key.
Yes,
those are... If you start eliminating...
Oh, you like get rid of death, you know.
Well,
sky's the limit.
If you get rid of death, you don't die, eh?
Hey, are you okay to discuss...
What's up?
I don't know. Sometimes
I need a haircut.
Sometimes your face just makes me laugh. I find you amusing. And I find some of the things that I discuss with you away from our microphones, sometimes you react in ways that surprises me. For instance, on Friday when we were discussing some business issues, as we do, I mentioned a text I got from your friend and you were like outraged. So just for context, Freddie and I played in a charity golf event for one of our very good friends and sponsors, Brett Tanner, Tanner Financial, and the Chamber Plan. Oh, and your buddy Howie got a long drive.
Oh, did you? Oh,
yes.
Excellent.
What'd you win? Well, I was going to say, what kind of shape is your golf bag in? Is it pretty decent? Because I'd like to give you the one I have.
Oh, my goodness.
Is it new-ish?
I could use a new golf bag.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Well, then I'll give it to you because I was going to sell it, but I'm... Hey,
the golf bag I have, right?
Yes.
Is the golf bag that you arranged for me to get, like, years and years ago.
Okay, good.
I think when we were at the mix.
Well, I'm getting you a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're playing golf together, and at some point in the round, Fred, who was going to hit first, we were sort of not really paying attention, and Fred hit up, not even... Like, not into a bunch of people. You didn't hit anyone, but you hit near some people, and they turned around.
They could hear it.
They could hear it, and they did the universal hands in the air. Like, what's the what? What? That kind of face. So we talked about that on the show. On Friday, I received the following text from your friend, Darren. He says, funny bit talking about Fred hitting into the foursome in front of you. I've seen that happen about a half a dozen times in three different countries. And I said to him, oh, okay, I'll reintroduce the topic and bring in this new info. Thank you very much. Anyway, I told this to you and you were outraged. Outraged, I say.
No, I was excited. Number one, he's delusional. I don't know what he's talking about. So that means I'm trying to think Mexico, United States.
Yeah, well, you played...
Granted, I did have a... I don't know if it was early this year or late last year. We were at Streetsville Glen, and there was guys coming off a par three, and I hit. I mean,
does that count?
And it was a bet. Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Well, it does because I shouldn't have. The thing is, they weren't off enough. And of course, when you can't control the ball to the degree that I can't control a ball, yeah, you should wait.
Yes.
But the other
for
stuff,
extra safety.
Like, but believe me, and as I said to you,
I know
if I had hit into half a dozen in three different countries, you would have heard about it long before now.
Okay. All right.
It would have been a thing. So, well, I don't know. He just sits around and thinks of stuff.
He does what? He sits around and what?
He sits around and makes stuff up.
Oh, that's what you think that is. So your contention is this text that I received from your friend Darren is not based in fact, not based in any reality that you recall.
It's him having fun.
All right.
And I guess trying to get mentioned on our show. So there you go.
Well, mission accomplished. You know, I would have forgotten about it. And then when I told you about it, like I got a bunch of texts there on Friday. And I was like, oh, I should make a note of this to tell Fred. Then when I was speaking with you, I said, hey, by the way, your buddy thinks you're hitting into groups. And then you just got all angry and aggressive.
I did. I was excited.
I know you were.
I was being emphatic. Like,
you were.
Howard, if that was a thing, you would have heard about it before now. I am sure.
In a second, speaking, I know, and this is, by the way, I'm giving everyone fair warning. Hundy Peas, our beautiful Patreon community, I'm giving you fair warning that coming up, as soon as Fred talks about the retirement Sherpa, in a second, there's going to be a little bit more golf talk. I'm just letting everyone know in advance. All right. And I'll tell you why. Because something very rare happened to me on the weekend. No, I did not get a hole in one.
All right, the retirement Sherpa. Tim Niblett is a portfolio manager. Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Tim Niblett will be by on Wednesday with his latest update. You know, we get a lot of feedback and people love the information that he gives. You know, even if you're not a client of his, you know, you have another guy. A lot of the stuff that Tim talks about, you know, it may initiate a conversation with your guy because he is so thorough. He really is. And again, if you have a guy and you're not, you know, you're not completely happy, you might want him to have a second look at your portfolio, see what you're up to, and he'll give his opinion. It'll be an honest opinion. You know, if he thinks you're on track, let it go. That'll be fine. If not, come over to the Tim side. A lot of Humble and Fred listeners have done that. And again, the feedback has been great. He's Tim Niblett. He's the Retirement Sherpa. And retirementsherpa.ca is how you can contact him. Great guy. Wonderful man.
You know, we often talk about golf as a sport as for a lifetime. And it is. I mean, this summer, probably around now, I could say that I started golf 50 years ago this summer. My dad took me out. He used to watch him chip golf balls in our backyard, and he taught my brothers and I sort of how to hold a golf club. And then we would, I was more into baseball as a summer pastime for most of the time, in between hockey. Hockey was my favorite. But so I would take my ball glove, and my dad was about 30, 40 yards away, and we had a huge backyard, and I would just sort of field grounders, basically. I just work on my baseball skills, and I kind of got intrigued by it. Anyway, 50 years later, you know, I'm still playing golf, obviously, quite occasionally, right, Phil? On more than one occasion.
Once in a while.
And, you know, it's anyone that's played it, no, it's a very frustrating game, and it's often, you know, it's just often, as we say, it's the game that's constantly kicking you in the nuts, and then every once in a while, you know, maybe you have a good shot. Like you had a couple, like your very last shot that we played on that day after you, you know, violently tried to take out, you know, people. Mm-hmm. That last shot you hit, that's an example of golf trying to suck you back in. It's like, hey, Fred, I know you had some trouble today, but how about this one shot and then you feel great. Mm-hmm. But it's the only sport I can think of where at age 61, you could be better at it than you were at. You know, when I came back to golf 8 years ago, I was sort of just, I was decent, but I hadn't played in a long time. But I'm not only better than I was 8 years ago, I'm better than I was when I was in my 30s. And I played at a pretty high level. Anyway, on Saturday, for only the second time in, for the first time in 5 years, and only the first time ever at my golf course, I shot in the 60s.
Nice.
Oh yeah, in a little mini competition. So no, like, oh, that one's good, Howard. It was like a full on, every stroke counts, and so I've prepared a song to let you know the score I shot. Do you know this song?
Yes. Summer of 84.
That's right. It shot 3 under par.
Nice.
Yeah, and I was getting a little nervous toward the end, too. I was like, I birdied the 16th and the 17th hole to go 3 under. And on the 18th hole, I was like, just sort of gagging it up. And I hit a bad tee shot, a poor second shot, an okay chip, and then I sank a 20-foot putt for that score. That's cool. And that was it.
Yeah, the 20-foot putt, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was cool.
Because at that point, you're thinking, ah, man, I let 69 slip away, and then bingo.
Yeah, I did.
Dropped.
Actually, it was funny.
Happy for you.
Yeah, it was cool. The smartest thing I did is I didn't try and sink the putt. I didn't try and, like, jam it in the hole and have it go 5 feet by. Anyway, it was cool for me, and I know people don't want to hear about golf, but I can just tell you it was a, you know, very significant. Because I've shot in the 60s before, but I've never shot in the 60s at my golf course. Did it 4 or 5 years ago. I shot 67 at another course out west. My home course in Moose Jaw, actually. But this was a little bit different. I was playing in this competition, and we were one of the last groups. And I just kind of, I don't know, it just sort of happened. I've been playing pretty well. I played, you know, decent with you. I've been playing decent this entire spring. But, yeah. This sort of shows you, goes to show you.
There's another interesting thing about golf. Because from time to time on big boy golf courses, I try and be under 100. Right. Yeah. So the level you play at is just like, you know, in another stratosphere, obviously. I don't even have to explain that. And here, and then I slice and dice the numbers in golf. So you shoot a 69 and I shoot a 99.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, that sounds horrible. But when you think over 18 holes of a big boy golf course, I only swing the club 30 more times. And again, that sounds like a lot. But just think about that. How good you are and how good. It just shows you that fine line in golf. You know what I mean? It's like...
No, I get it. I understand what you're saying. And you know what's really weird about the game is that I'm actually closer to you in skill level than I am to somebody on the PGA Tour. Mm-hmm. You know?
And it goes back to what you say, you know, practice more, get on the course more, and you know that 99 can quickly become an 89, and then you're only swinging the club like 1.2 times more per hole. Or I am swinging at 1.2 per hole. Yeah, it's
but think about this. My average score isn't 69. My average score is like 74 point something. Let's say it's 75. So if you shoot 89 now, I'm only 14 shots better than you over the course of 18 holes, which isn't even one shot per hole.
But in the world of golf, that's, on one hand, it's huge. On the other hand, when you really think about it, depending on how much you play, anyway, it's... What am I saying? It's what keeps you coming back. Because you think, Jesus, I shot 99. I can think of maybe 10 times I made mistakes on that course that could have been avoided, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway.
Well, I can tell you that, I've said this to you before, privately and publicly, if you played 10 days in a row on the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th days, you'd never shoot over 90. I was going to say, for me, the bigger issue, I wanted to share this with the audience because it was thrilling for me. And I'm going to be honest with you.
Fantastic.
It was a huge milestone for me.
Yeah.
And but the idea that it's the reason I have gravitated toward the sport, because as you know, I'm obsessively competitive. Yep. And so it gives me a chance to work on my own. And to do fitness and instruction and practice and to quantifiably see if I can get better. There's no other sport. If you and I were good tennis players or squash or, you know, there is one sport that I think older people, men and women, can improve on. And it's a weird analogy, but it's cycling. I know some guys... That started one guy in particular, my friend Al, who did our plumbing, did your sink from what's Al's company's name? We'll figure it out in a second. Anyway, he started cycling a couple years ago, and he was doing like 20 and 30 kilometers. And now on Sundays, he goes out and does 100-kilometer cycling.
Right.
To me... That's absurd, but it is at least something where as you get older, you can improve on just by practicing and being more fit, etc. Combined Air. That's Al Martin from Combined Air. His, as an example of a man sort of in his early 50s who got better at something, because there's very few sports you're going to get better at.
Yes, although I will, if I can... How old is he?
I think he's 52.
Okay, yeah. Well, he's still a young man.
Yeah. Oh, I know. He's a baby. And a decent golfer, too. But I've always looked at, and I'm very impressed by people that start a sport like that, a physical sport, and go from being like doing 20K a couple times a week to doing 100 kilometers. Like, I find that amazing to me. As amazing as shooting 69 at 61 years old. 61, I'm better statistically in every category than I was 8 years ago. It's absurd.
Mm-hmm. And did you golf as much in your 30s?
Well, in my 30s, it was the last time I played this amount of golf. In my 30s, I was similar to where I am now in terms of, you know, the things I've played in. But I wasn't anywhere near as... as all around as good a player. But you know, I always tell the story of my father. About 6 weeks before he died, he and I had a chance to play golf and was still at 84 working on his game. And I remember he called me up. This is just a few weeks before he died. And he calls me up, and because we had played recently, I said, "How's it going, Dad?" And he goes, "Oh, man, I'm having trouble with my backswing. I'm just taking it too far inside." And I started to laugh. And he goes, "What?" I go, "Dude, you're 84 years old. Aren't you just happy to have a backswing at this point?" But it shows you the obsessive, the idea that you can always do better.
Now, your dad died. He died on a green, right? Somebody hit into a foursome, right?
Yes, a left-hander. A plucky left-hander from B-Town.
What a way to go.
Yeah.
What a way to go.
I would love to go that way.
No, it really is. It's a great sport for that. It really is. Because even if you don't become very good or... just if you enjoy being out there, I mean, you can actually enjoy being out there. Like, I wouldn't even consider getting on a sheet of ice now and playing hockey. I just wouldn't.
Yeah.
Because I'd be afraid of falling or twisting or something.
Yeah.
You know, I might play baseball, but then I'd probably pull a hamstring running to first base. Like,
no, I know. I know.
Golf is the one thing where you can get out there and do it.
Well, and you know, you and I were talking about what we might do next winter, but it's the kind of thing where if you were in a place where you had opportunity to play over the course of a few weeks, even if you weren't going to like go to the level that I am, which is like I train for it, but you could go out and one and do a little bit better each time. And I guess overall, that's what I love about it is the fact that, you know, I practice, I work on the right things, and then you just hope that one day, like the other day, I didn't hit it any differently than I did with you and our little group at the charity tournament. But all my mistakes were good. Like, I never got in any real trouble. And when I did, I was able to play it. And I had a couple of putts that luckily went in, et cetera, et cetera. But when it was over, I was kind of like, well, that it was a lot easier than I would have thought. And a very good friend of mine has been telling me for a long time now. He said, you should be shooting the 60s quite regularly. I'm like, oh, I don't think so. And then just little by little, you know, my average score has come down. And
but the margin of error to be shooting in the 60s all the time, I mean, like one or a couple of blow up holes. I mean, your blow up hole would be different than mine, obviously. I don't even know why I said that, but you know what I mean? Just that's a big, what's the lowest score ever shot? 58, was it?
In a tour event, the lowest score ever shot was 58, 59 a bunch of times. But there's been people on sort of mini tours, and there's been talk about somebody has shot 57, I think, is one of the lowest scores. But for an average player, just to give people some perspective, the average golfer shoots about 90.
Yeah, and then there's a fine line, right, where it's at. Is it absolutely impossible to shoot a 56? It's never been done. It's just weird.
There's a group of people who teach and instruct in Sweden that have a school called Vision 54, where they have this. Wow. And they started working with this golfer named Annika Sornström years ago. And their vision is that you can birdie every hole on the golf course. They say, why not? If you can birdie one, why can't you birdie all of them? Anyway, I don't want to belabor this because I know people hate it, but I'll just tell you, it was a huge day deal for me, and that's why I share it with you, my friends, and Patreon, and Hundy Peace. Speaking of sports, I did want to segue into this. Are you aware, have we talked at all about the Olympics and how we're going to, how they're trudging on, even though, have you read any of these stories about why it's all IOC. It's all billions. They stand to lose billions and billions of dollars. It's less about lives, I should say, than it is about money.
Yeah, and the Japanese aren't backing off. It's in Japan, right?
Yes.
Yeah. The Japanese are, they're not backing off. I mean, as you say, trudging forward.
Yeah.
And, but I think a couple of countries already have bowed out, and it's getting so close. Like, I know the world can live without them. And I know it's disappointing for the athletes, of course. But you know what? We've all been disappointed. People have lost businesses. They've lost livelihoods. So, you know, suck it up and deal with it. It's too bad. You know, you were an Olympic athlete, and, you know, when your turn came, there was a world pandemic, but... again, there's lots of people that have suffered disappointments. It almost seems silly at this point. But you know, they've gone ahead with the Euro, the soccer thing.
Yeah. No, I know.
With reduced capacity and what have you, but I guess the Olympics looks at that and they think if they can do it, why can't we?
I thought the story that would be of interest to you especially, and I thought it was somewhat is that it turns out that even if the Japanese and their government wanted to maybe push back, the IOC won't let them. Once again, it's the IOC that is sort of, and the article, the gist of it was the IOC is actually taking precedent, is actually almost the idea of being more powerful than the Japanese government.
Well, yeah. You know how I feel about the IOC, and I have.
This is why I brought it up.
You know, it's just, you know, it's just, it's corrupt. It is. You know, there's money stuffed in envelopes, handed to people, and, you know, how some countries, you know, they never test positive for drugs, and then other countries do, the more vulnerable countries, on and on and on. They use small countries as an example to show that they're, you know, they have integrity.
Oh, yeah.
And on, you know, I really have no use for it.
Fizzy, what did you want to say there, pal?
Well, I would say from the Japanese point of view, it's a lose-lose-lose situation because they already delayed the Olympics from last year. That cost $6
billion. Yeah.
If they held the Olympics like they did NHL games where there's no spectators, they lose $23 billion. And if they try to delay it even further, see if there's some end to the pandemic before the Olympics, well, guess what's coming up in a few months? The 2022 Winter Olympics, and that's in China. So they can't do much about it now.
No.
Where is Japan with reopening? How are they doing?
Like, so they're suffering at the moment from a rise in cases because their vaccination rates aren't high enough. They thought that they could just ride it through from prevention, but the problem was, I think they started with a state of emergency from a few weeks ago. And so the problem is they're trying to control a bunch of things. They've had states of emergencies in their biggest cities. And so at the moment, athletes are going anyways, but they're isolated to the point where it's almost like the NHL playoffs, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, and the other thing driving this, of course, is NBC sponsorship and that whole part of the IOC, you know, chicanery. You know, it's surprising you asked about the cases in Japan. I just don't know what it was, but I've assumed that Japan has been doing pretty good all along. Their case counts, they're actually statistically better than us. Yesterday in Japan, they had 1,300 new cases in the entire country. Let me see here with Canada. I think
their first wave only went up to about 2,000 or 1,300 or so.
Now we're about the same as Japan.
It's horrible for them.
Japan had 1,900 new cases. We had 1,200 new cases. But when I read this article, and I've read a couple of them now, I just had this assumption that the Japanese had done a pretty good job through COVID.
So far.
All right.
There's just so many. Again, watching all those sports from the States and all the stadiums are full. Howard, it wasn't that long ago we were saying, geez, I don't think I'd ever go to the States. Remember when they were... It was exploding down there, and it was better here. It's just amazing how that has flipped. And, you know, the Montreal Canadiens are in Vegas right now.
Oh, really? They're still playing, are they?
Yeah, for the start of the Stanley Cup semifinals, whatever they're calling them.
Okay.
You know, in the country, the Canadian government allowed Montreal to travel there, and the Vegas Knights are going to be allowed to travel here.
Okay.
With reduced capacity. And it's make me thinking, like, I don't know why the Jays can't play at home without fans, but just, you know, like, why not?
I don't know, man.
They're pretty hard on that. They're not letting the Jays come and play in the Rogers Center in the friendly confines, feel at home. They got to play in Buffalo. Frustrating.
Well, it's time to turn our attention southward. He is the host of the award-winning The Noel Castler Podcast. I'm sorry, Noel. I don't have it in front of me. What's that, bud?
It's all good, brother.
What is the name of your podcast?
That's it, The Noel Castler Podcast.
There it is. Man, I've been looking forward to catching up with this cat. The last month has been filled with all things Trump. And, you know, we were talking about it earlier, Noel. We've really pulled back on the Trump talk. We've pulled back on a lot of American political talk, although, as you know, we both keep track of it. There's so much. I was watching your I love your car rants. I was watching your latest one this morning about all the chicanery and the fuckery going on down there. So why don't we start with that? We'll get to Trump in a second and the fact that he keeps showing up at people's death memorials and shit. But but first, why don't you explain to us Canadians, if you can, what exactly is going on with this DOJ investigating reporters and their and other senators and their families?
Well, it's good morning, guys. It's good to see you. Great to be back. It's terrifying. You know, it's in many ways, it's a bigger scandal than we've ever had in government. You know, it makes Watergate look like child's play. And basically, the DOJ, you know, about five or six guys at the DOJ on Trump's orders decided to investigate his perceived enemies, which was Adam Schiff and his family and his children and a bunch of reporters, Michael Schmidt at the New York Times. And what they did is they subpoenaed Apple for all their phone records. So like everything on your cell phone, every text, every website you visited, you know, just completely, like, that's what the KGB did. I mean, it's exactly what they do in Russia. It's like, get everything on these guys and blackmail them. And that's what they did. And the scary thing is that it continued until last week. OK, they were still collecting that metadata from Apple up until last week when Apple themselves sent a letter to these people and said, oh, by the way, we've been getting all your cell phone data since 2018. You know, so it's terrifying, and it's terrifying that it took the press to alert us and that Merrick Garland didn't go in right away and say, you know, you guys are all fired. Anybody who worked for Trump, raise your hand. OK, get out of here right now. I mean, that's what should have happened because he installed a police state. You know, he it's like the Stasi or something. And I'll say one more thing and I'll shut up. The you know, the three guys in charge, Rod Rosenstein, Bill Barr and Jeff Sessions, who it began under when he was AG, they all said, oh, we didn't know anything about it. Which was insane. Like, you don't subpoena a computer company to bug the offices, you know, and the personal, you know, communication devices of a sitting congressman without the AG knowing about it.
Yeah, and it's Apple. It's not like they got the phone records of Ask Jeeves from, you know, 2020 or 2010. You know, when you said it was a huge scandal, like, I started listening to, I actually heard an interview with one of the Rolling Stone reporters. I'm sorry, the New York Times reporters who had been also had his stuff subpoenaed, you know, they were watching his stuff. And you think, wait a second, the problem with this is the story now, we heard it, you've reported it. But the problem with is if you're a Trump supporter, you just won't believe it. You'll go, oh, well, that's just the left and their, you know, whatever bias, cancel culture or whatever.
Excellent point. It's the deep state, and they were spying on him first. If you remember, one of Trump's first, like, wacky things was he said Obama was spying on him. Mm-hmm. You know, out of the blue, when he became president, he started to be like, Obama was spying on my campaign. They were spying on me. It's always projection with him.
Right.
He knows what scandals. He knows he's got sex crimes and this and that. So he projects.
Well, the problem with the United States now, right and wrong doesn't matter anymore. It's what team you're on. We've been through this a million times. Like, even with Watergate, eventually Republicans came over to the right side. And when I say right, I mean right, wrong side. That's never going to happen now. A scandal like this, what will it take to go to the next step or any kind of justice or any kind of resolution? It'll just be deny. I'm on this side, you're on that side. I don't care what the issue is. I'm going to ignore it if it doesn't fit into my political slot.
What? Well said, Fred. I mean, that's what he did. That's the ultimate sin and the biggest crime of Trumpism is it that he divided a people. You know, like you said, during Watergate, Fred Jaworski, all these Republicans eventually said, hey, that's not who we are. We don't do things like that. Now we have Michael Flynn at a QAnon rally and people are like, hey, can we have a coup like they did in Myanmar? He's like, yeah, we should. You know, anytime up until now in American history, when something like that was said, a former general would say, that's not how we do things here.
Yeah.
That's the only answer you give to that question ever in the history of the U.S., except for now.
You know what's most remarkable, and I had this conversation with my lady friend on the weekend. We were looking at some of the headlines in the New York Times, and one of the things that I've had several moments since the beginning of the pandemic where I'm like, wow, I never thought I'd see that happen. You know, the rise of the anti-vax movement, etc. But when you think about what we saw on January 6th, in the 5 months since then, how that has gone from, and even the Republicans on record saying, this is terrible, we can't have this in our country. They've gone from that to, it wasn't so bad, it was like a bunch of tourists, you know, a normal day at the Capitol. I think that's got to be one of the great surprises of this century, that has somehow, we saw it, but now we're supposed to think it wasn't that bad. And there's a whole bunch of people in your country that are convinced it was not Trump supporters, but Black Lives Matter, Antifa, etc. And I think that's remarkable.
I agree. It's stunning, you know, and it's not what this country has supposedly fought for, you know, on other shores in other countries, you know. And it's like you guys just said, I think Fred just said it. It's not about the truth. It's about who lies first and who lies loudest, you know. Because they have this support. They have Fox News and all these people that will support that lie. Look at all these congressmen that are going along with that. Not to mention your MGTs or whatever she's called and Lauren Boebert. You have this, you know, this discourse that's completely toxic. And the real sad thing is that's being funded by the Koch brothers. You know, that's being done by cynical billionaires who are making a fortune off of this. Rupert Murdoch and these guys, they know what they're doing. They know what the truth is.
You know, Fox News, funny you say that. I just happened upon last night, Mark Levin, you know, that creepy little big mouth. Oh, that he's disgusting. In fact, he's doing the show last night, and he had like a mark on his forehead that looked like an open wound. I wish I had done that.
But are you anyway, sure it wasn't the side of the beast?
Exactly. I don't know. But he had Ron Johnson on from Wisconsin, and they're carrying on this conversation, and it's like I'm just shaking my head. Like this Ron Johnson, you know, he's big in the campaign to justify everything happened that day. Like, as you guys say, wasn't a big deal. Yeah. You know, it was a little handful of people. There was no guns there. Most of the people inside the building, they stayed even within the ropes. They just walked in out of curiosity. And there's people sitting there believing this after seeing what actually happened.
That's my point. You know, Ron Johnson just got kicked off of YouTube last week. He's banned from YouTube for like a month or something. He's a United States senator. You shouldn't be getting kicked off of YouTube for anti-vax information in the midst of a pandemic.
Mm-hmm. And don't get us wrong, Noel. Like I know you're aware of Canada and Toronto. You work with a lot of Canadians in your business. So you know that. Listen, we got stuff going on here that's awful. And we've had a really a rough couple of weeks with some at-home issues. And to be honest with you, we really haven't, and Phil could back this up, we haven't had much political talk since the last time you were on. Mm-hmm. But it is fascinating. You were talking about, you know, Fox being, of course, the still supporting the Trump, you know, big lie. Here's an interesting fact. Neil Cavuto from Fox, Sean Hannity, Fox, Trump Jr., and the Kushners have all moved down to Mar-a-Lago. They've all moved. Kennedy bought a place for $5 or $6 million down the road from the you know what it's like, the compound in The Godfather. You know, so they all, literally all these people have moved down there to be near the seat of fucking weird power. It is, again, it's just fascinating that they're, it's like they're the weird royal family of America.
Absolutely. You know, and they're protected in Florida. You know, the Ron DeSantis is worse than Trump because he's like a smart Trump. He's just as disingenuous. He's just as corrupt. But he went to Harvard and Navy JAG school and stuff. And he gets all the little gestures. He does his little finger movements like Trump. And he will protect those guys. They're down there because they won't get extradited for the most part. You know, he will stand up for them. And it's also flush with Russian oligarch money, which is backing a lot of this stuff, especially people like Ron Johnson, who you just mentioned, you know. So, you know, they're down there because it's like it's safe quarters for them. They don't know who's going to get picked off. If you stay in New York and Park Avenue, you might get a knock at the door. You know, the FBI's coming and knocking a little bit, you know.
Although on that point, I must say they better come up with something soon, because, I mean, you know, the midterms are next year. And the Republicans, that side, they will be able to argue, look at all these accusations. By now, Trump was supposed to be in jail. He was supposed to be charged with this and that and all these accusations. Nothing's been proved.
Yeah.
That will only enhance 22 for the Republicans.
I agree with you.
They better come up with something soon. That's
and,
all
and I was going to ask you that, Noel. Is there a light at the end of this, you know, shifty tunnel?
I don't think so. And I agree with what Fred just said, you know, and I talk to a lot of these guys that are former SDNY prosecutors. I'm on other news shows where these guys are on, and these guys message me and they all have faith. I don't have faith. Trump got away with this for 40 years. I mean, everyone knew he was tied up with the mob in the 80s when he was getting concrete for Trump Tower, and there was a Teamsters strike. So he gave away three apartments in the building to the Teamsters' girlfriend. So the Trumps, you know, so the trucks could bring in concrete, like for Fat Tony Salerno. Like, the, you could have picked any point in his career and the guy would have gone to jail and no one's done it. And let me just, can I say one more
thing? No, go ahead.
Like you started the show with the DOJ. Also last week, they decided to continue to defend Trump in a defamation lawsuit posed by one of his sexual assault victims, E. Jean Carroll, who he basically said, she's too ugly for me to rape her.
Yeah.
That was his excuse. It wasn't like, how dare you say that? I would never do that. He was like, look at her. She's not my type.
Yeah.
Right? So the DOJ is defending him. They need to give us justice because you have to balance the scales. That's why there's scales of justice, right? And they're unbalanced now. And like you said, if they don't do it soon, it won't matter.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You know, it's it was a good point. And it's something I wanted to talk a little bit about because I've had this, you know, this bit I've been doing about how the reason I stopped watching Fox or paying much attention the last few months, both Fred and I have talked about how it sort of drains you energy wise. It's a really ugly thing to always be involved in. And so we both backed away. But I also backed away for the reason I think I said this to you once, Noel. I keep waiting for them to come on TV and go, okay, you finally got us. We're a bunch of fucking assholes. And that's never going to happen. But is there, when I say light at the end of the tunnel, is any of this stuff going on in New York, anything going on with the government that will stick to Donald Trump eventually?
You know, there's two ways to look at it. He turned 75 today. Today's his birthday. Happy birthday, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know,
happy birthday, President Poopy Pants.
Exactly. So how much do you punish a 74-year-old man who's gotten away with all this, you know, who's been president, who fomented a coup, who lied about election, who presided over a pandemic, you know, ineffectually because he didn't want it to affect his campaign reelection chances to the tune of 600,000 people dying, right? How much do you punish a guy? Like, he's already gotten away with it is my point. He's 75. They bring a case against him. They're not even bringing charges till November, right? Then he lawyers up, then they get discovery, then it goes to trial a year from now, then the trial lasts a year and a half, you know, and he's in his like late 70s. I'm not trying to be depressing. It's just like, you have to do it now because you have to shut down and prove to people what happened here. You have to go over, you know, after Ivanka and Jared and all these guys. And
okay, we don't do it. Just hold there for a second, Freddie. We need to take care of some business here because if we don't, we're going to get way backed up. Noel, just pause. Always a pleasure. Noel Castler, not only do I follow him with his podcast, but I watched a rant of Noel's just before the show. I just love that you're doing that. And I think it's a real good platform for you because in 2 minutes, you really explain a lot of things very well, as you do here on the show. Freddie P., what do you want to tell people about?
Well, the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. If you have a small business and you have some employees, you know, that you really value, you might want to make them feel a little more secure. Go to chamberplan.ca today. Get a free quote. Doesn't matter what size your business is. They will design something for you. I mean, 30,000 Canadian businesses are part of this. They've been around for 40 years. There's prescriptions and dental plans and all sorts of therapies, depending on the you know, your buy-in, obviously. They have the Teladoc system, Best Doctors program. It really is fantastic. Anything that you need is available at chamberplan.ca. Go there today. Get a free quote. Find out how simple it is to sign up. And, of course, it's stable. They've been around for 40 years. It's the right thing to do for your people. Chamberplan.ca.
You know, it's funny because I looked at my health gauge watch just before Noel came on and I was kind of cruising along at about 75 beats per minute. But all this Trump shit's got me up to 91. You too can keep track of your blood pressure, oxygen, saturation, heart rate, pulse wave velocity, which I believe I'm doing well at. Activity levels, calories burned, and so much more. Freddie and I were talking about this before the show, how you can see how much you slept, light, heavy. The company sees Health Gauge as a major disruptor in the traditional healthcare industry. HealthGauge.com. We'll be talking to Timmy later this week. And it's really simple. Look, I'm wearing mine. There it is. It's kind of cool. And you can get it at HealthGauge.com. A couple more minutes with Noel. So one of the stories, I'm sure you've already seen it, commented on it yourself, but there's a story in the New York Times yesterday about how Trump is so desperate for attention. And I think it's at his golf course in Bedminster. What is the course there in New Jersey?
Trump National.
That's it. So just like Mar-a-Lago, he keeps showing up at people's engagements and weddings, but now he's showing up at people's memorial services for their dead loved ones, and then he won't leave.
Yeah, exactly. He's working the funeral circuit, and he stays.
He stays is the best part of that.
That's who he is. He's a narcissist. You know, he just needs attention, you know, and it's insane. And I'm sorry for getting everyone's blood pressure up because mine gets up too. It's like, I want to look away and I wish we could in many ways, but like the voter restriction laws, you know, the recounts that are still happening over the last election, you know, the machinations that are occurring to enable this guy that you just said, that's walking around Bedminster stoned. Like I saw his tape from Saturday. He gave a tape speech that was part of the MyPillow guy, had a big rally in Wisconsin and stuff. Like, and Trump gave this speech and his eyes weren't even open, bro. His eyes were closed. He was on so much because he takes benzos in addition to the Adderall, like to come down, that he was slurring. Like he sounded like a drunk. So like imagine this drunk, you know, or, you know, drug addled guy coming into your funeral, you know, and just rapping and trying to glad hand. You want a selfie? No, I don't want a selfie. My grandfather's dying. You know what I mean? I want to bury my kin and get the hell out of here, you know?
I guess he figures if it's at his facility, the people that booked it must, like, find him acceptable. So he just goes in there. That thirst to be stroked and complimented, it's like it's overwhelming.
And he's looking for chicks. Like, his favorite thing is to feel up somebody's bride. You can do a Google search and you'll find a bunch of tapes of him like going into people's weddings when they have them at Mar-a-Lago. Mm-hmm. And then he's kissing on the bride and grabbing her and the bridesmaids. He literally is a predator that way. He would do that in Trump Tower. He would roam around the lobby and look for like the high school girls because all the school trips would go in there to use the restroom and he'd like hit on them. Like he's an insane predator, like a shark. He just needs to be circling for attention.
Yeah,
I you know, one thing I wanted to bring up too that I asked Rachel about this because it's my girlfriend. Where I said, have you read much about Melania Trump since he left office? It's almost like she disappeared.
Yeah, she was out of there. She was going to leave him before they were going to get divorced before he got elected, and then he got elected. He couldn't be a divorced president, so like they extended her contract, you know. But I don't think it went a day beyond the election, and she never lived with him when I worked for them. Like she came from a separate location. She had a boyfriend that everyone knew. Mm-hmm. He didn't care. Like she lived with her parents during the White House years out in Potomac. Like they were just, you know, it was just a, like an on paper kind of relationship. But you're right. She's gone.
Because it's not official, obviously, but she's just not in the picture anymore, it seems. Yeah,
exactly. That's why he did a rally last Saturday. He's like, Melania sends her love. And I'm like, I'll bet she does. You haven't talked to her in a long time because she hated him. I saw their body language. Like they wouldn't even stand. This was behind the scenes, like in the Apprentice 10, 15 years ago. She wouldn't even stand next to him.
Well, in the early days of his presidency, remember a couple of times he went to grab her hand and she swatted it away. Yeah. And then it's obvious they sat her down and said, listen, you got to get this straight. You got to play the part here for the next 4 years. But that's another thing. You know, we all expected her to officially leave him, dump him, divorce him after his presidency. And that still officially hasn't happened. Let me ask you this. Do you think it frustrates Fox News and, you know, that wacky side of the right or the Republican Party that everything is so calm right now? Like, there's not a lot of news. Like, is that calmness sort of bliss in America right now? Is that going to help in 22 or 24, the fact that it's just uneventful? We're not all rushing to CNN and MSNBC to see what the latest crazy scandal is or something. It's just normal.
Mm-hmm.
Is that good?
It's not good for their brand, because their brand, they're chaos agents. You know,
right. Yeah. Okay.
Fear. So it's well said, Fred. That's why they're ginning up. Oh, there's a huge crisis at the border. No, there's not. Yeah. Like, nobody's freaking out about the border. You're right. It's calm because we have an adult in charge again, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, and even
at the G7, they were saying having him there being a normal person and putting a mask on when he should and, you know, carrying on in meetings. You know, I was reading on the weekend, soon as Trump would arrive at one of those G7 or one of those international conferences, he had attitude like, I'm the man, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody else is stupid. I'm the smart guy. Everybody else. Nobody else knows how to run their countries. I do. And that's gone now, too, which helps in those forums.
Humility. Humility is the most attractive thing in a leader. You know, like an open ear and being willing to listen. The most embarrassing moment, in my opinion, of the whole Trump thing was when he went to that first G7 in 2017 and he pushed that guy from Moldova somewhere.
That's right.
Right. He just pushed him out of the way. Like, come on. Like, that's so indicative of the worst characteristics of America and who we are.
And the fact that you and some Americans can appreciate that, but it's sort of not appreciated or understood by, I think, a very great deal of Americans, the standing in America and what happened to it around the world during the Donald Trump years. And I was going to say the same thing, Freddie, on the G7 front this weekend. Joe Biden was just like a normal, calming, regular guy. You know, some of the people that I follow on Twitter that used to sort of chirp Trump all the time, or even saying, like, you know, hey, this many days in a row without us being embarrassed by our president.
And I gotta believe there's a lot of moderate Republicans. I mean, there are people, Republican, that didn't like Donald Trump and maybe wouldn't vote for him again and don't agree, that have got to be enjoying the current atmosphere. And that's going to have some influence going forward. It's like, yeah, we're back to normalcy. I think I'm going to lean that way rather than take a chance on another circus, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's hope so. I mean, and they've sensed that. That's why, again, all the voter restrictions, all the gerrymandered districts, you know, they're trying to protect the Louis Gohmerts and the Jim Jordans and the Ron Johnsons, you know, the corrupt few that want to rule over the many. You know, and that's what we have to stop. And we have to educate people and hopefully, like you said, Fred, sway enough people. Like, doesn't it feel good to not have a dumpster fire
every day? Yeah. Well, and you know what's interesting, too, is, you know, when Trump started his From the Desk of Donald J. Trump blog and how they shut it down in 3 or 4 weeks because it was getting no traction. That gave me some hope. Before we let you go, as always, you know, since we sort of met you during the pandemic. And I'd like to check in and see how life is for you as an American. How are you, where you live, is it all the restrictions are gone? You can go to restaurants and mingle with people.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, we're not crazy, you know, and I agree with you guys. I don't think people should be in baseball stadiums right next to each other. In my opinion, we should still be very cautious. I wear a mask when I'm out in public, just out of respect, even though I'm vaccinated. But, you know, yes, restaurants are open. You still tend to sit outside. But things are moving again. Me personally, I'm going to go to the beach. You know, next time I talk to you guys, I'll be doing it from the beach. You know,
sweet.
I skipped that last summer. So,
what about going into the city? I know you're outside of New York City, but have you gone back and are you starting to mix it up with people in the big city now?
Yeah. I go into the city actually every day. And okay. I drive into the city. And yeah, I am. I went to a comedy club for the first time. Yeah,
how was that?
It was weird. It was really weird, you know, and I felt weird taking my mask off, but I felt for the other comedians, you know. Yeah. I didn't want to sit in there like, you know, that perpetual smile.
Sure.
Put on just to support them. And So it felt weird, but it's happening. You know, Caroline's just opened. They've had a couple shows and stuff. I'm doing a show.
Broadway is coming back sooner than they thought. I think it's coming back in the next little while. It was supposed to be September from what I remember, but I saw some social media video from Lin-Manuel Miranda about Broadway's back, and I was like, oh, cool.
It is coming back. And I worked on the Tony Awards for 20 years. Normally, that's what I would have just done. We would have had them yesterday, actually.
Okay.
Bruce Springsteen, my old boss, is starting up his show again at the end of the month on Broadway, which I've seen. It's a good time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's telling stories. So he's kind of kicking it off, even though it's not technically a Broadway type show, but they'll be back soon. It's coming back, baby. We just got to be safe.
All right. Well, listen, man.
I can't wait. Up here, it's very frustrating, but we're getting there.
Once clubs open up, you'll go back and do your stuff. You'll go back and do your one man show.
Oh, no, it's the discos that I want.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I forgot. That's right. I'm going back to do stand-up. He's going to start doing his disco dancing, which he really enjoys. Noel Castler, follow him on Twitter. It's great content, fresh every day, at Noel Castler Comedy. And, of course, look for Noel's podcast. And we will see you in 1 month's time, young man. Take care.
Got it, guys. Bye.
Thanks,
Noel Castler.
Good to see you.
Reporting for duty. Man, I love that kid. I was in the East End a little bit this weekend. I was around my area, and you can definitely feel a little bit of a opening up vibe. There was lots of restaurants with patios. Some of the corporate restaurants near here, the Kelsey's and Milestones and such, were that parking lot across from the studio filled for the first time in a long time.
Very nice encouraging.
Yep.
I made reservations Friday night on the patio at the Old Bridge Inn in Young's Point. Reservations made. Looking forward to that. That will be my first restaurant meal, so to speak, since, late last summer, I would imagine.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. And you know why it's happening? Because every day more and more people are getting vaccinated across Ontario, receiving their COVID-19 vaccines. Health Canada approved vaccines are conveniently available in hospitals, doctor's offices, pharmacies, and mass vaccination sites. Every dose brings us closer to what we've missed. Join millions of Ontarians. Do your part and get your shot. Visit Ontario.ca. Book vaccine. And, of course, paid for by the government of Ontario. In fact, one of the stories I wanted to bring up, because you're double-vaxxed, I'm double-vaxxed, Phil's single-vaxxed. Most people that we all know now are at least single-vaxxed. But Rachel and a few other people waiting to get their second vaccines are now, it seems, being allowed to book a little earlier than the 12-week window. Also, I'm hearing talk of cross vaccinations. I know we've brought this up on the show before. If you've had the AstraZeneca, they're now saying it's allowable. Do you know anything about this, Fizzy? You guys hear about this?
Well, yeah. Delise is her second vax is Friday, and she gets to choose right up to the line of scrimmage. So when she goes for her vaccination on Friday, she can tell them that day whether she wants another AstraZeneca or try something else. So she's doing all her research about mixing and matching. And
same with Rachel.
Yeah, to me, it was a no-brainer. I had AstraZeneca, no problem. Give me another one. To my mind, I sort of want to stay with what I had. But there are people considering mixing them up.
Well, one of them is Rachel, and I didn't really get into it with her. I just said to her, because she said to me yesterday, I can get another one, and I think I don't necessarily need to get the AstraZeneca. I'm like, well, why wouldn't you want to get the same? And she said, well, if it's not available where I'm going to go, I'm going to do the mix and match one. And I said, oh, all right, if you feel that's okay. And I guess it is okay. And when people say, well, why is it okay now and it wasn't okay before? Well, because they've had, I don't know, another 90 days of research.
Exactly.
You know, they just know stuff now. I know.
Exactly. You know, and again, it's from the very beginning, all levels of government, all those people that were put in the position of making the decisions. That's why you cut them some slack. You know, they weren't, they didn't have crystal balls. You know, they couldn't see into the future. We learned along the way, you know, and decisions were made where maybe in retrospect wrong, but they didn't have enough information. Mm-hmm. Easy to look back now and say that. It's a thankless position to be in.
No, it's and you think about where we were 1 year ago now in mindset and physical, you know, proximity to others. Like, I just know, you know, I saw both of my kids last week, and they, you know, both of them let me hug them, where a year ago this month we weren't doing that. And I think there's a real relaxing of society. I feel it because we're vaccinated. The guys, I haven't played golf with somebody our age, including the couple you and I played with, that hasn't had some vaccination. Mm-hmm. Well, a year ago, we didn't do that. We didn't have it.
And the numbers are climbing, percentage for vaccination. It's quite impressive. And, you know, we're going to get to the point where COVID won't be eliminated, but when you get COVID, it'll be like the flu. It's not going to kill you, and you're not going to be severely ill.
Yeah.
But, you know, we will know that, you know, there's a chance you may get this, but it's going to be just a thing.
Yeah.
It's not going to kill you. It's not going to put you in the hospital. It's not going to put you on a respirator. And then once we're at that point, we can get things back open.
Yeah, and you know, at some point, we should just take out a full-page ad in some kind with social media and the newspapers and just say, "Dear anti-vaxxers, you're fucking welcome." Okay? You are welcome. Because we did our part. We went and got this silly little inconvenience. Oh, boo-hoo. They gave me a needle.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I hope they don't suck out with the passport. I think that's a thing we should all have. Carry it in your wallet. And, you know, it's to the discretion of people. If they don't want you in their place, or they don't want you on their plane or in their hotel, they have the right to say, "Could I please see your vaccination certification?" And if you don't have it,
so they've had two major airlines in the States have had a huge spike in in-flight altercations, that to the point where they've stopped serving booze because they're making people wear masks, and some people who don't want to are getting drunk and getting into it with fucking people on the plane. Like, it's ridiculous. But it's their business. They own the company. And if they don't want you on their plane because you haven't been vaccinated, fuck away. Mm-hmm. One other point, because you had dogs. We, you know, you and I and Dan, we've all had dogs. Mm-hmm. And I say this to Rach. I say, you know, it's funny. You know, an anti-vaxxer, but if I want to take Stan from the daycare that I board him at occasionally in the summer, if I want to change boarders and walkers, you know what I have to show them? His vaccination papers. You can't take your dog and get him or her boarded unless you show proof of inoculation.
Mm-hmm.
So fuck it.
The other day I was running some errands, just my position on that. And I'm running errands. I'm going in and out of places. And then I went into the beer store, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And I forgot to put my mask on. I just jumped out of the truck and I went into the beer store. And I walked in and I went to ask a guy a question about these Rattlers or whatever. And he said, sir, your mask. And I was horrified. Like, I turned around and ran out and got my mask and I went in and I was just apologizing to everybody. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. I just lost my mind for a second. I forgot that I hadn't put it on. They're going, "It's okay, sir." And I said, I'm fully vaxxed. Like, you know,
double V. Double V.
They said, it's okay, sir. Like, it happens all the time. You forgot. I said, "I know, but I feel horrible."
I've done that.
It's not me. I care about you. And that's what this is all about, right?
I did it once over here at the Circle K. I forgot to put it on, so I just did this with my shirt. I was walking around. I was going to get myself a beautiful popsicle. All right.
Bandito.
Bandita. All right. Without further delay and ado, here we go.
All right.
Danderan, the anchorman, comes. As for credentials, he has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the anchorman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care. And his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And now, live from the Dan Duran newsroom, situated on the shores of Lake Chemung, here is Anchorman Dan Duran.
Today is International Bath Day. You can celebrate it by taking a bath and catching up from the weekend. Biden's sorry about Trump tour continues today with a meeting with Macron's brain-dead NATO. The first U.S.-EU summit since 2014 is on the schedule for tomorrow, and Putin and Biden will bump nuclear suitcases on Wednesday. Also, China might have a nuclear power plant leak, and Wasabi, the Pekingese dog, wins best in show.
Mm.
But it is a sad day today, as the man with the world's largest family has died. From India, Ziona Chana was 76 years old and left behind 39 wives and 94 children.
Nice.
He developed a wife rotation system. He's famous for this.
Did he really? He had like a wife Rolodex?
Yes, pulling from the spouse dorm and giving each night a different wife. Or all the wives a night in the schedule.
Yeah.
His 100-plus room purple-painted mansion had become a tourist attraction, and he will be missed by at least 133 immediate family members.
Back to the dog show. I'm sorry, I was just texting, but you mentioned the Westminster dog show.
Yeah, Wasabi.
Yeah, they are out. They did it outdoors. Did you mention that?
No.
Well, it's normally at Madison Square Gardens.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And for the first time, again, I don't know if it's the first time in their history, Dan, or not, but I did hear that they did move this thing outside. Thank you. That's my Matthew McConaughey.
Thanks for clarifying that, because we didn't know.
No, no, I just, because I was reading the New York Times yesterday morning, Dan. This was a significant event.
Clarifying your impersonation.
Oh, my impersonation, yeah. It's a bang on. Yeah. That's right. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. I love that. It's weird. I never used to think I would, but I like that dog show. I like dogs jumping around and shit.
It's a dog show. Why wouldn't they always have it outside?
Yeah. I know.
Well, I'm surprised.
Because maybe they're worried about all the dogs that are outside just sniffing stuff. They're like, hey, I could jump over that thing, or I could sniff this bush.
Or I could run off.
That's right. Maybe that's why they don't have it. The dogs are like, we're very well trained, except when we're outside. And now with more news and views, here's Anchorman Dan Duran.
The lie factory that is Donald Trump is upset about people lying. Apparently, candidates and potential candidates are falsely claiming Trump has endorsed them. And those lies have Trump's people fuming. Imagine Trump followers being dishonest. They're cracking down, though, by correcting the record. Former Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski said, lots of candidates pretend to have the support of President Trump. Most are full of shit. You won't know when President Trump endorses someone. I'm surprised by the irony there.
That's right. They don't do irony on the right very well.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
That's right. That's not one of their things.
It's just amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's still a thing. Like, people are desperate for his approval, his endorsement. It's
Fred. Wow. Isn't it? I think it's even more amazing that there's a group of people running around that country close to him that are perpetuating this lie that the election was stolen. There are people running around. I forgot to bring it up with Noel that, you know, Trump made this pronouncement last weekend that he would be president again by August.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
no, I know.
The fact that he hasn't been locked away for criminal charges, but also, like, what is weird about this, and I think it's the thing that sticks with me, is if you were around this guy and you were looking at him, what a bad dude he is, how could you continue to support him? Is the thirst for power that intoxicating? I guess it must be.
It is. I'm sure it is. I mean, look at the Republicans, the Republican Party. It's always, you know, voting against everything that any Democrat comes up with. It's crazy. The state, all the Republican state places that are, you know, like changing the rules to modify the elections. All of that is just, it's become one big, you know, cesspool of lies and deceit.
Mm. No, I believe you're right.
As we touched on with Noel, I'm getting a little impatient, a little tired of the impending Donald Trump arrest and paying for all his crimes.
No, I got it.
Because it's not happening.
Hasn't happened yet.
Well, it hasn't happened yet. You think it would have. And if it doesn't, I'm sorry. That it's not going to look good, you know, because it will just be used as, you know, they'll accuse the left or the Democrats that was a ploy, like an election ploy or you know, it was misinformation. They'll be able to throw it right back in their faces. So I just wish the bastard would be charged with something.
Now, I suspect, I will say this, I suspect you're right. I hope you're wrong. But then again, your judgment is, you know, skewed by the fact that you can't tell how close people are in front of you on a golf course. That's why you keep driving your golf balls into random groups around the world. Mm-hmm. Did you hear that story, Fred? Dan? Was Fred Dan?
Yeah. Yeah, he just mistook a hole or just...
No. Darren said, our friend Darren said that Fred was like, oh, he does that all the time. He just hits into people all the time. In fact, has done it in three different countries. Mm-hmm. Fred contends that Darren's got his head up his ass.
Hasn't happened?
Not to the degree that Darren is accusing Fred of. Yeah. You know, it's fake news.
Although I am 65, I guess I forgot.
When are you going to be 65?
In a couple of weeks.
Sweet boy.
Well, July 9th.
Are you sure? Okay. Yeah.
So you're just looking forward. You're not looking back.
No.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
You can't stop it.
Yeah. Look back in anger, the Hovland and Fred story.
You know what I'm saying? I just, at some point, it should or get off the pot.
I do know what you're saying.
Let's fry this guy or move on. Stop talking about it.
Well, it takes time, my friend. Mm. Just like it takes time to produce magic truffles in the Netherlands.
Nice red light. Diet.
Thank you.
See, you see how you wove that into the conversation?
Well, actually, truffles are much like Trump. They grow in the dark and you feed them shit.
And they start with tea. Mm-hmm.
RLH produces their own brand of iMicrodose packs sold online in the Netherlands, and they're available at iMicrodose.nl. On this side of the border, the company has created a movement. We've been talking about this with our friend Todd Shapiro, who has got himself involved at the level of the CEO of this publicly traded company. They're on the CSE. Their ticker symbol is TRIP. And Todd's brought his evolved self back to the air as the CEO of this company with a market cap of over $100 million. Check out more about this company, iMicrodose.ca and iMicrodose.nl. And once again, I got to get a piece of paper. Noel Kassler, of course, the Gig Sky guest of the day. Guest of the day. Tell us about that, Frederick.
Are you dreaming about your post-lockdown vacation? If you're as eager as the rest of us to get out and travel sometime this summer, be sure to add the Gig Sky app to your list of travel accessories. The Gig Sky app provides worldwide mobile data coverage in over 190 countries with newly updated prices, including a data plan for Canada. It's the easiest, most affordable, and convenient way to stay connected internationally, whether you're pulling up directions, looking for the coolest restaurant or bar, or sharing your post-COVID pics on Instagram. You'll want to access data when traveling. All Gig Sky data plans, okay, are prepaid with no contracts or recurring fees. You get what you pay for, and your service is never, ever, ever throttled. Download the Gig Sky app today. Enter code HF2021 for $5 off your first plan, or visit gigsky.com for more information.
Now, I got a suggestion for you.
Okay.
Why don't you have a big intro for your guest of the day that's pre-recorded, so it's already in there.
Yes, and then, you know,
You know, it's the Gig Sky guest of the day.
Can you do that for me?
Sure.
Just do one of your, and now, the Gig Sky guest of the day. I'm Dan Duran. You know, it's going. I think that would be funny, because Dan likes to plug his own stuff. I'm Dan Duran, and now Humble and Fred, significantly.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is our friend Ravi Rishi Maharaj, Rudra's brother. Now, Rudra, of course, is in charge of, you know, Gig Sky Canada and a whole bunch of other stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But Ravi got his sweet self a hole-in-one last week.
Oh, did he?
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. He sent me a picture, and I was all, like, jealous because I never had one. Although, in that significant round on Saturday, on the 16th hole, it was a par three, I hit my tee shot to, you know, I don't know, half a foot away. Like, it was as close as I've come to a hole in one in a very long time. But Ravi got himself a hole in one last week, so I give him hearty congratulations as the Gig Sky guest of the week. Gig Sky guest of the day mentioned.
Yeah, expertly woven golf into the conversation again, I just noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So shooting a 69, how aggravating is that going to be for you ultimately, though? Because now that's sort of your current benchmark, and if you don't shoot 69, will you be like, oh, geez.
No, because
I didn't shoot 69.
Because I know how hard golf is. It's, you know, it's like I'm realistic. I'm not going to shoot 69 every time I play. It's kind of neat. It's cool to know it's possible, though. It's like,
oh. Well, when does your OGs kick in?
What are OGs?
Oh, geez.
That's good. Oh, geez. Well, first of all, if you ever hear me,
I shot 71. Oh, geez.
If you ever hear me go, oh, geez. Do something. Call somebody.
No, is it 75? Is it 73? Mm-hmm. Where does it happen for you?
Well, as an evolved spiritual golfer, I have a realistic view of every day is a different thing. That's what I like about the game. You know, I played with a guy on Saturday. The day before, I'd shot even par. And he was not shooting even par on Saturday. Had a decent game, but all the way around, he's like, oh, it's not like Saturday or it's Friday. And I was like, yeah, because every day you play is different. And, you know, I'm going to play today and I'll have a realistic view of today's game.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't sound like you, but yeah, okay.
Oh, shut it. Shut it. Fucking, how dare you?
Who are you describing again?
I was going to say, how dare you call me on my bullshit?
One thing I know, was this Saturday, Howard, you said you did this?
Yes.
Saturday?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know no golf clubs suffered that day.
No. That's no golf clubs were injured in the course of that day. Nope. I'll tell you, fellows, you know, Dan's got a point, but I have not hit myself or the ground with a golf club in this entire season, so...
That's good.
So far,
congratulations.
So good.
Yeah. And a pat on the back for that one.
Well, as I've said to Rachel, I said my streak of not wanting to punch myself in the face is intact. Dan Duran, thank you for your time.
Can I ask you one more
question? Oh, sure.
Have you ever...
Oh, we're out of time.
Have you ever had a hole-in-one?
No.
Huh. How many 100,000swings do you think you've...
Millions. In fact, on my Facebook memory thing that came up last week, my older brother, David, who you both know, we all know, it's Phil too. My brother David and I played a round in 2013, and it was the first time I'd been in the presence of somebody that got a hole in one, and I was freaking out because I'd gone, at that point, 43 years or whatever, and I'd never seen one. Mm. Forget having
one. Have you had an albatross, though?
Yes.
Yeah. That's harder, though, isn't it?
Way harder.
Yeah.
What's an albatross?
It's a 2 on a par 5.
Oh, okay.
Which means your second shot is, like, how many yards?
Well, it's a longer shot, so.
Way longer shot.
And the reason it's harder is because the number of people that can actually do that is so reduced. I mean, listen, you have as much a chance as me of getting a hole in one.
Oh, I know. It's so random. The thing is, but... And I would have zero chance at an albatross.
Yes.
And that's the thing. When you stand up at the tee on a par 3, I think everybody in the world's thinking, what if this goes in?
Yeah, yeah.
Very few people on their second shot in a par 5 are going, oh, what if this goes in?
Yeah, you're like, I hope this doesn't go on the crick.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever had a almost hole-in-one, like just it's sitting on the lip of the cup? Great on the
no. I've had like the one on Saturday was a pretty close call. It was the kind of thing where it had my attention all the way to the hole. It landed on the right part of the green and then started bouncing forward, and then you could see it rolling like a putt. And in the end, it was honestly less than the length of the grip of my putter close to the hole. But I haven't had it sitting on the edge. I've also had probably 20 twos on par fours. You know, I've sank my second shot over my lifetime many times.
See, I once hit into a group on a green, and it hit a guy in the forehead and went in the hole. Does that count as a hole in one?
Yes, it does. Actually,
right off his forehead, and into the hole.
How many people have you hit with golf balls?
Maybe one.
Yeah, I've done it once. by mistake.
No, I did. Remember Bill?
Oh, right. That's right. You hit our friend Bill.
He came above. He was down below a hill, and I hit the ball just as he's coming up, and it hit him on the shin.
Our buddy Ian Service, he hit me. Mm-hmm. All right, Dan, are you finished?
I hit. These are the golfers I hit.
These are the golfers I. Hey, I beaned. Hey, Dan, thanks for your time today. I think we're.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Do you have any other questions? And good luck with your move today. Are you moving today?
Moving tomorrow. Lastly.
Well, good luck with that.
From one lake to another. So.
Well, I'm looking forward to your next adventure. Okay. What's that?
He's moving on up to the lakeside.
Yeah. That was great. Thank you.
Yeah. No.
Okay. I know you're thinking to
he's going from a wide expanse to a rather limited space, but
yeah.
It's summer. You don't need to be inside. You don't need to be inside.
All right, gentlemen. I'll see you later. Wednesday, I guess, right?
No show tomorrow. What's that? No show tomorrow. Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Thank you, Dan. Good luck tomorrow. Bop, bop, bop. Ali Mohammed was supposed to be our guest from Light Medical, a leading Canadian virtual medical clinic, and not available, apparently. I don't know where he went. So we have a couple more minutes, a couple of stories I wanted to run by you. Do you have something for me if they're interesting?
Oh, of a interest? Few things, but I don't know where to go with this, you know. I don't know. Ned Beatty is dead at 83.
Oh, I used to like Ned Beatty.
Yeah, remember Deliverance.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think in the early Superman with Christopher Reeve, I think Ned Beatty might have. He was a very famous character actor for a long time when we were growing up in the 60s, 70s and such. Rachel and I watched a movie I'd seen before, but I'd only seen it once and hadn't seen it for a long time. The story of the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson. A movie called Love and Mercy with John Cusack. Did you ever see it when it first came out, Freedy?
No.
I think you'd really enjoy it.
Still haven't.
I want to recommend it to you because it's got such a nice, it's an interesting movie, and it's got our buddy Paul Giamatti in it, who's fucking so good.
Oh.
He's so good in these movies. He's just, in this movie, he plays Dr. Landy, the guy that, you know, basically at first saved Brian Wilson from 3 years of living in his bed, and then eventually ended up sort of tormenting him. It's the story of Brian Wilson coming out of this phase of his life, and also the creation of Pet Sounds, which was the inspiration for Sergeant Pepper. Mm-hmm. And included, as Paul McCartney called it, one of the best pop songs ever written, which is God Only Knows. But I think you'd really like it. I think a lot of people, if you haven't seen it, check it out.
It's not a documentary?
No, it's a, I guess they call these like a biopic or something, but it's really well done.
Right.
Really, really well done. So I watched that. Also on the weekend, it was announced that Stephen Colbert is coming back to the Ed Sullivan Theater, where he took over from Letterman. And Phil, this is confirmed. He'll be doing a show today, tonight, for the first time with a live studio audience.
Yes, he announced this a couple weeks ago, but he was so outrageously, happy about the development.
Yeah.
And so, up until now, I think his only audience was his wife, wasn't it? Wasn't he?
Well, they've all been doing it from their homes in various locations.
Right. So he had guests in recently in his house, but otherwise, he had no one since the COVID-19 pandemic began.
Yeah.
Watching that, the story of late night, what kept coming back to me, and he talked about his struggles in the early going of that show.
Yeah.
Was... okay, you do the show on Monday. Now, within 24 hours, we got to come up with another one. The punishing pressure that has got to be, create. Can you imagine that, though? You did the show on Monday. Now you're sitting around at a table, and it's like you got to come up with stuff for tonight. You don't have a week. You don't have a month. It's not like a quarterly special.
Yeah.
It's like tomorrow night. We got to do this again. Tough.
And I thought, you know, getting back to the story of late night, I thought it was really interesting. You know, Colbert, that particular segment, as he went from mm-hmm. being this character on The Daily Show mm-hmm. to being himself on The Late Show. And you can see the early part of his, you know, he was pretty awkward. Mm-hmm. And then they talk about how he evolved into Trump really helped him because it gave him a focus mm-hmm. and sort of a lightning rod and I think he really flourished during that time. In fact, I think he's the number one rated like on the actual TV. I think he is. I think Corden gets more sort of mm-hmm. online social media, whatever. Mm-hmm. Phil, what do you have to eat there, bud? What, you got a nice little snack going?
Sorry, my wife gave me some samosas.
Oh, I love samosas.
Well, you could have shared them with us.
Well,
let me courier them.
mm-hmm. The one I don't understand, and they talk about, you know, struggling and then settling into the role, is the Trevor Noah thing. I'm sorry, I still try, and I just go from Jon Stewart to him. I mean, Jon Stewart was just such a natural and so cool. And to me, Trevor Noah is just, it just seems contrived or something, or I think he tries too hard. Or,
you know, I knew Trevor Noah as a stand-up. I'd seen his stand-up mm-hmm. prior to him taking over for The mm-hmm. Daily Show. I haven't really watched him much on The Daily Show, but I kind of know what you mean. I think you have to like him.
Yeah.
Because as a comparable to Stewart, it's so different. Their styles are so different. But even he's come into his own during this time. And again, he's not appealing to you and I anymore. He's appealing to a younger crowd.
Well, this is it. On the flip side of that, I really got to hand it to him because obviously he's holding his own and doing a good job, or he still wouldn't have the job. So, I mean, to this old guy, I don't buy it after John Daly or John Stewart. I loved him so much, but you know, to give Trevor Noah credit, I mean, he must be pulling it off, because you know what? If he wasn't, he wouldn't be there.
Yeah, exactly.
So good for him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll try and reschedule that guest. What else? I got a quick feedback here. Somebody said was listening to you discussing the attack of Muslims in London, and immediately brought to mind for me. This is from Chris Butt, B-U-T-T. Brought to mind for me Michael Moore's Bowling for Columbine, where he points out the conspiracy of fear perpetrated in the U.S. by corporations and supported by government to keep the American people fearful, so they go out and buy guns to make them hungry for material goods. I don't think we being in Canada can divorce ourselves from the virtual or the vitriol spilling over the borders from the U.S. because they dominate our mainstream media. He says, I'm sure that kid may have been influenced by what's going on down there. I only wanted to bring it up because Chris, and I think it's a valid point. Did we ever find out, has that kid ever been, what's going on with him? Is there any update about his mental state?
Yeah, he was 20-year-old, you know, loner, sort of weirdo. Although he's had some friends come out and say that they're surprised. Even apparently one of his best friends was a Muslim. And that kid actually came out and said, I can't believe this. I've never heard him say anything derogatory but you know, this is severe mental illness. You don't know what switch flipped in his head. To me, it's like, you know, we had this conversation with Ralph the other day, you know, and I said, you know, Muslims got to feel safe in Canada. And he disputed that a bit. The outpouring of love and support that came on the heels of that is mm-hmm. really remarkable. Like right down to the GoFundMe page, they put together well over $1 million dollars. And, you know, and I was watching a bit of the ceremonies there on Saturday. And, you know, I mean, every shape, size and color of people there lending their support. And
I'm glad.
It was pretty,
because we like
horrible
it.
Tragedy. But I mean, from that standpoint, it was actually pretty encouraged.
I mean, Canadians, we like to believe that we're better than that, that we're better than Americans. We do. We have this, you know, we're shy about saying it sometimes, mm-hmm. but I think we believe we're better than they are. And as I said, it's a horrible tragedy. And the kid that survived is like, that's going to be a tough road. Mm-hmm. Speaking of children, there was another. Did I not see, Phil, or hear that another 100 bodies have been found? Residential school bodies.
Yeah, another grave, and I think it was in Manitoba, was it?
Yeah. Was that also Catholic priests in charge of that?
Yeah, it's another one of those residential schools, right?
How we haven't shut that organization down completely, how they're allowed to continue.
But Howard, just look at what you just said, and I'm guilty of this too, and I was last week. All the things we've said about the Catholic Church in the past week, if we'd have said that about, you know, the Muslim church or whatever you want to call it, we probably wouldn't have gone there. Why is that? And I mean, you know, I mean, there's issues in all churches, but
I don't totally agree with that. But I will tell you why we're more comfortable, you know, I'll tell you why for me, because the Catholic Church has been in the Catholic Christianity is the predominant Canadian, you know, religion for as long as I can remember.
But yeah, you would talk never about our Judeo-Christian society, right?
Yes.
But you would never utter the words, oh, Muslims, we got to shut that down. You would never say that.
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe. But when I say the Catholic Church, I don't mean I do mean Catholics. I mean the corporation.
Yes.
You know, the fact that there's this corporate entity that gets tax breaks that has, you know, that's got, it's an organization.
That hid child abuse.
I mean, the Jews, we got our problems, but we're not, you know, there's not graves of children that were in our care. Muslims, they got their problems, but they're not the product. You don't get to, there's not a private Muslim system as there are the Catholic school system.
Well, there are Buddhist murderers, but you're not.
What's that?
They're not like killing the Indian out of the child.
And you
that's
don't
what they're saying.
You don't know that necessarily. I mean, you know, in the Middle East, there's been.
I'm saying here in Canada.
No, I know. But I'm saying, you know, they're been homosexuals pushed off roofs because they're homosexual.
For sure. I'm just talking about here in Ontario. I live in a society where the Catholic school system exists. There's no Muslim school system there's no private Jew school system. Well, there is, but there's not.
Well, there is.
There's not a public Jewish school system.
No.
So that's why it's I think we're more comfortable saying, hey, these guys that have been in charge for all this time.
Mm-hmm. It was this weird raison d'etre that somehow if you put these kids in these residential schools, they'd be more social. They'd be more mainstream to us in Canada.
Yeah.
To take their own culture out of their own souls.
No, I know.
That's not just a church thing.
Anyway, let's wrap this thing up. Fred, you have one more mention for our friends in the government, please, if you wouldn't mind.
Yes, every day more and more people across Ontario are receiving their COVID-19 vaccines. Health Canada-approved vaccines are conveniently available in hospitals, doctor's offices, pharmacies, and mass vaccination sites. And every dose brings us close to what we've missed. And, oh, that is so much. Join millions of Ontarians. Do your part. Get your shot. Visit ontario.ca/bookvaccine. Paid for by the government of Ontario.
All right. Well, that was weird. You were starting to kind of have another Zoom breakup. We're going to be looking at some point. We're going to be looking at alternate broadcast options, but that's for another day. Here's the Fizz Bomb.
This episode of Humble and Fred is brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa. Gig Sky, the Chambers Plan, Clear Air Solutions, Palma Pasta, Saves Tech Security, NextHome.ca, Red Light Holland, City Parent, and our newest sponsor, HealthGate, providing digital solutions to improve health outcomes. We stream to the planet from the remote headquarters of the Humble and Fred Show. More Humble and Fred tomorrow and online at HumbleandFred.com. Microphone. I got a microphone.